Tim, it's Adam.
I'm here, Adam.
Oh, Tim. It's good. It's good to hear your voice.
Oh, yeah?
You
sound tired.
This is day 37, South by Southwest Film Festival. I've seen 200 films.
200?
I could be exaggerating.
No, I'm sure you're not.
But I've seen so many movies, I can't remember all of them. And I have no idea where Martin is. I'm getting a little worn out. I kind of wish he'd just come scoop me up, to be honest.
You're done. You're ready to hand in the chips.
I can't imagine this going much longer. I miss the island. I miss the jungle sounds. T'Challa, the natives. And I hate to say it, but I miss David.
I feel like it may be healthy for you to stay away.
From the island?
Yeah. It sounds like you are addicted to the island, much like I'm addicted to mass substances.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Is it getting worse before it gets better?
I feel like Whip Whitaker over here, except I didn't save anybody.
Yet.
So tell me about these movies you've seen.
Okay, well, two that I can pull off the top of my head of memories is You're Next, directed by Adam Wingard and written by Simon Barrett, who were associated with VHS, the horror anthology.
Okay, sure, yeah.
And the thing about this movie is it's actually from 2011, and it showed at Toronto that year and then kind of disappeared. It didn't show up at Sundance, and it didn't get, you know, released or anything like that. So it's just kind of been sitting on a shelf collecting dust, and it's kind of got this kind of like a legend put behind it now that it's this really great horror film, and it deserves to be seen, blah, blah, blah. So it was added to the midnight schedule of South by Southwest this year. And I have to say, it is really... it's really scary, actually, at moments, and it's relatively smart in the way that it reinvents the genre by... It puts this kind of fresh twist on the home invasion horror subgenre.
Okay.
I.e. Scream, Strangers, Halloween. Anytime someone breaks into your house and you don't want them to break into your house, that's home invasion. I don't know if you
knew
that.
That's good to know. Yeah, that's good to know.
There's this gang of, like, masked, axe-wielding murderers who descend upon this family reunion. And all the hapless victims are trapped inside this, you know, mansion of a house, essentially. But one of the house guests proves to be, you know, they have a secret. And they tend out to be the most talented killer of all of these.
Interesting.
And it puts a new spin on the final girl idea, and it plays with a lot of conventions that you've seen in other movies, and there were moments of it that reminded me of Die Hard. As weird as that sounds.
Yeah. I'm thoroughly confused at this point.
Well, you know, in Die Hard, Bruce Willis is kind of stuck in the skyscraper. He's sneaking around trying to kill these terrorists or whatever. He doesn't have his shoes on. He's doing all this kind of survivalist stuff.
Right, right.
The final girl, quote unquote, in this movie, the main character, who has this intense background in, like, survivalist training, she is kind of sneaking around the house, setting traps, Home Alone style also.
Oh.
And kind of taking on these killers one-on-one. So there's the diehard element. There's a little bit of a Home Alone element. It's actually kind of what I would imagine John Carpenter directing Home Alone might look like.
Wow. Okay. I can dig that.
And it's an interesting cast. You know, all these guys, Ty West, Joe Swanberg, Adam Wingard, the guys that work together on VHS, they've been friends. And so they constantly pop up in each other's work. And, Ty West, director of House of the Devil, is in this movie.
Hmm.
Albeit briefly, and Joe Swanberg, who directed Drinking Buddies, which we talked about, and was also in VHS, he's in the movie. And it's just it's funny to see all these guys showing up in each other's work. I think this is probably the, you know, it's closer to something like House of the Devil than it is VHS in terms of quality.
Okay.
VHS is kind of hit or miss, but I thought this was really funny. And actually, there was a girl sitting next to me at this screening, Tim, that screamed any time something remotely questionable happened on screen. it wouldn't even be like the killer. Like, there's a scene where this guy has a meat cleaver, and he's going to cut a wire that has been strategically placed in front of the door to, like, chop people's heads off when they come running out.
Oh, yikes.
But he sees the wire, so it's fine.
Oh, okay,
and
okay.
And he cuts the wire, which is also fine.
Right.
But when he cuts the wire, the girl next to me, I don't know if she was anticipating something or what, but she just almost leapt out of her seat. It was insane. It was scaring me. I was scared more by her than the movie. Really.
So the movie was working, or was she just hypersensitive and scared of everything?
No, I think it was definitely working. It got good reactions from the audience. There was a lot of jumps and scares, but there were also tons of laughs. I think it's not as earth-shattering as Cabin in the Woods, but it plays in the same area. It tries to do some of the same things by flipping genre conventions on their head and kind of making fun of them. So... it's really good. I think it got bought by Lionsgate, so
okay, wow.
I think it will get a release this summer.
Wow, so after several years, it's gonna get a release.
Yeah, and that was kind of the trajectory of a lot of good horror films over the past decade. Trick or Treat didn't come out until I think sometime in 2009, and it was made in 2007. And in Cabin in the Woods, you know, that was sitting on a shelf for a few years, too. I think it was part of the MGM fallout. It got made, and then MGM went bankrupt. Nobody knew what to do with it. Lionsgate picked it up. And then after Chris Hemsworth became a star from Thor, that was enough to push it into being actually released.
Okay, so it was kind of a strategic move by the studio to release it when it was released.
Yeah, and I think here, you know, these guys, they are slowly getting more and more known. So if this movie has the benefit of coming out after stuff like The Innkeepers and VHS, then it'll probably do it some good. Maybe... we're getting to a point where original horror films will be allowed to be released, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah. You know, I think it takes really good movies. It sounds like this one is good. And then maybe it takes something like Paranormal 18 to not make any money.
Yeah.
You think that'll happen?
I doubt it.
So before we move on to the next movie.
Sure.
I got to ask, you had a guest on a few days ago.
What's his name? Oh, yeah, Russ.
Russ.
Gentleman wearing a straw hat.
A straw hat.
Yeah, and Russ, as you know, he disappeared into a cloud of dust because he was late for a fly tying seminar.
Right, yeah, I was curious if he ever showed back up.
If
you were able to enjoy a movie along his side once again.
I'm pleased to announce that I did see Russ again.
You did.
And we didn't get a chance to watch a movie together, but it was a life-affirming moment. I looked across the crowded 6th Street, people walking all over the place, live music being played. My eyes caught a falafel cart.
Oh, he so desperately wanted a falafel cart.
And he was standing there, in one hand a falafel. We made eye contact, and slowly he raised his fist into the air. A very... John Hughesian moment. I could almost hear the music in the background.
That's a touching moment.
It was lovely. And it was kind of like, this is it. Everything you wanted has come true. You are free to continue on your travels. And I tipped my hat. Hopefully he's in Jackson Hole right now.
I'm strangely moved by the story. You'll have to forgive me. I don't have any words right now.
And as I briefly mentioned, he is a no nonsense man, and he was not messing around with that falafel. He may have ate the foil. I don't think he had time to unwrap it. I just think it went down like one giant Tylenol gel cap.
Oh, so what did you see next?
Another movie I saw that I really liked is this documentary, Rewind This, by director Josh Johnson, producer Carolee Mitchell, and director of photography / editor Christopher Palmer. So Rewind This is this documentary about the revolution of VHS and the home video market. And it gets into all kinds of topics, kind of starting with Betamax versus VHS and how Betamax was ultimately a superior format. But with the support of the adult entertainment industry, VHS became the dominant format. Hmm. So it kind of starts there, talking about porn and how that shaped, you know, the format. And it then goes into, you know, hilarious territory of covering all of these bad, bad horror movies.
Okay.
Some favorites like Street Trash.
Sure.
Which we've talked about a few times
on
the show.
Yeah.
Basket Case. There's even this like 2.5 hour backyard Western that was like, it's all amateur guys just in someone's backyard. It was hilarious to see clips of. Yeah, it was passionate because you had a lot of collectors there who are going to flea markets and, you know, driving to these hidden spots around the world to find VHS tapes. And it was really funny. There was a lot of great clips in there, and there's the director of Basket Case, who's one of the interview subjects. He goes on this rant about, you know, kind of the classic hand-painted cover art that we used to see all the time on movies, and how that's been replaced with this bullshit photoshopped floating head kind of cover art. And he goes on a rant at one point that includes, just to pull it out of context, Criterion, go fuck yourself, which I thought was hilarious.
What was his reasoning? Why did he dislike them so greatly?
Because he was like, that's not art, that's just graphic design. You know, if you're talking about preserving art and all this shit, then you need to be preserving the original poster and cover art material.
Sure, yeah.
Also, you know, he's probably just vying for a spot in the next Criterion release because, as you know, Basket Case, a classic.
Of course, yeah.
I had a chance to actually talk to the filmmakers, and they were telling me that it took them 3 years to make this movie, and they interviewed close to 100 people.
That is a lot of interviews.
It's a lot of interviews, a lot of footage. The interview subjects were, they ranged from collectors to film critics to filmmakers to industry people who, you know, helped create the VHS. People like Lloyd Kaufman and Elvira showed up to give their 2 cents.
Yeah, that's great.
It's always great to see Elvira.
It is. It is. She's like an ageless wonder.
She is.
She's, the queen of the night.
As you know,
she made a deal with the devil. Must have been.
Yeah. As you know, plastic does not age.
Oh, right.
But Rewind This was, it's a great documentary. It's really fun. And it got bought by Kinetic Rights Management for distribution. So that's very promising. I think cool. We'll see. It reminded me of, it falls into that place of kind of like King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters or something, where it's extremely informative. It teaches you about a format, you know, in that case, arcade gaming, in this case, VHS, that maybe you didn't know a whole lot about. There's a nostalgia factor to it, and it's also just really entertaining and funny. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Those are the two movies I saw. Well, I saw 5 movies today.
Oh, wow.
But those are the only two I could talk about because I'm just delirious, and I need to get a falafel.
Yeah.
or some kimchi fries or
yeah, sure.
breakfast tacos to keep going.
Yeah. You sound pretty terrible.
I'm near death. I'm waiting for Martin to desperately come pick me up.
Where is Martin?
I have not seen him since he dropped me off. I think he's just been on like a raging bender. I think he's on just 6th Street getting wasted. Can robots get drunk?
I don't know. I felt like robots had to be drunk.
Just by their very nature.
Right. They should be drunk all the time, and if they're not drunk, then it's bad.
That's one of Asimov's rules of robotics, I think.
Really?
It's like rule one, a robot cannot harm its maker. Rule two, a robot must drink Mad Dog 2020 at all times.
I think you're right.
Well, there's only a few days left of the festival at this point. So Martin has to show up again, right? I mean,
right.
He told me we were coming back. I'm going to hold him to his robotic word. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? I'm just going to keep going to movies.
That's good. Stay the course.
Stay the course.
1,000 points of light.
So, yeah, I guess I'll just I'll keep your hand radio.
I got it. Don't worry about that.
In your hand.
Yeah.
And I will make contact tomorrow.
All right.
Godspeed.
Over and out.
In our last chapter of David's Adventure, : The Mystery of the Missing Atom, David had to help Mothra find the twin royal fairy princesses before heading to his next location, Leota's. Join us now for another chapter of David's Adventure, : Mystery of the Missing Atom.
David's Adventure has sights to behold. All this island's wonders and mysteries so old.
All right, I'm finally here. Leota's. Now, let's find the owner and ask him some questions. If there's anyone that knows everything about the island, it's Jay Leota.
David walked up to Leota's, only to find it was closed. He knocked on the door.
Huh. No answer. Leota's is never closed this time of day.
David looked around to see if he could find Jay Leota. Finally, he found him, sitting on a rock, appearing pretty bummed out.
You look pretty bummed out, Jay.
I am bummed out, David.
What's wrong? Anything I can do to help?
Sure. Damn native kids stole my key again. Can't open a store without it.
Really?
Sure thing. They do it at least once a week.
Well, where do they hide it?
One of three places. I already checked my left shoe and under the monster centipede nest, and it isn't there. Leaves only one.
Jay paused for dramatic effect.
The Eye of Skullface Island.
How do you get it from there?
Well, normally I just wear this Super Mario frog suit, and it lets me swim all the way down to the bottom. But I've been eating too much of my own food recently, I can't fit in it anymore.
Oh.
Now maybe you can, though.
David gladly offered to help and put on the frog suit. It was a little big for him, but it worked. So he didn't care. Jay took him to the lake.
So, all right, what am I looking for here?
All right, now you're going to see a large chest at the very bottom of the lake. It should pop right open, the key will be in there.
This sounds like a video game level.
Yeah, something like that.
With that, David dove into the lake. David explored the depths of the lake. Because of his frog suit, he was able to breathe underwater with ease. He went further and further and further into the depths. Finally, he found the chest at the very bottom. He approached it and simply kicked the top of the chest.
He found it.
With that, David quickly swam back upwards.
Hey, what do you know? You got it. Thanks.
No problem.
All right, come with me and I'll make you a sandwich. What do you say? On the house.
Thanks, Jay. I was also wondering if you could help me out with a problem.
Yeah, sure thing. Just step inside and we can talk.
As they entered Leota's, a number of mechanical bears holding guns have popped up.
Ah, nuts. Not this again.
Will Jay and David survive the blue grass playing mechanical menace? Will anyone save them? Join us tomorrow for the conclusion of David's Adventure, : Mystery of the Missing Atom.
Thank God. God. Doing that voice so much, it's almost like it's becoming me. I don't know. Oh, I can't wait to get back to my real voice work, you know what I mean? This shit is ridiculous. What? I'm still recording. Damn it!